Welcome to the Golf Channel Podcast. I'm Rex Hoggard. It's my pleasure to be joined by Larry Nelson, 10-time PGA Tour winner, 19-time winner, and the PGA Tour champions.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Most people get done with their PGA Tour careers and look forward to the golden years. Your golden years have been really golden.
It really has, and I tell you what, it was the greatest thing. Back when I turned 50, the leading money winner on all tours was actually Hal Irwin on the Champions Tour. I mean, he won more money than anybody on the regular tour, or European tour, or whatever. So it was a pretty big deal back then. Of course, Nicklaus and Palmer and Trevino and Player, all these guys were still playing out there. So it was kind of the place to watch all the, you know, past legends, I guess, basically. And so it's changed a little bit. When Tiger came out, the money flipped. so anyway, it was better for people to stay on the regular tour longer if they could. Simply because there's just more money.
At 69 years young, you seem to be more competitive now than maybe you were when you first got on the Champions Tour 19 years ago. How much of that is your competitive fire, and how much of that is the fact that you've always been one of the best on tour in the game when it comes to fitness?
Well, fitness is a real big issue with me. It's not, I don't care about living, you know, a long, long, long time, but I want to be healthy while I am. And I started working with this girl about 13 years ago, Sandy, and I just asked her, I said, well, give me three more years. And
so 13 years ago, you asked for three more years.
Three more years. And so it's really nice to have a, you know what you did 13 years ago at, I guess, age 58 or whatever it was, 57. And she knows what I did that long ago, and that and I'm actually doing better now than I did 13 years ago. So it's kind of nice to have a scale, or, you know, have something there. And so it gives me something to work on, and I love to still go out and compete. I mean, it's, and I'm still competitive. When it gets to the point where I'm kind of shooting it out for last place, no, I won't do that anymore. But, you know, I've got some top tens in my future, hopefully this year, and if I can do that, it'd be great.
Now, the reason you're here in the Golf Channel studio is for Charles Reimer, who's getting ready for his PGA Tour Champions career. And it's interesting to me that you're here to kind of work him through some of the things that have made you so successful from a fitness standpoint on the Champions Tour. I have to be honest here. Is there a part of you that just wants to tell Charlie that maybe that ship has sailed?
No, I wish. I mean, honestly, I would tell Charlie if I thought it did. But I honestly believe I was no... I was not unique back then, and neither is Charlie unique as far as his flexibility, his strength, or whatever, but he can become unique, and that's what I think that's what Sandy and I are going to talk to him about today, is that we can kind of get him in a position that he can be better than he was at 38. I honestly feel that way.
Charlie Reimer. That's who we're talking about.
Okay. Charlie Reimer. But what's interesting, Rex, and this is the big thing, and we talked about, Sandy and I have talked about this quite a bit. Golf has changed. You know, the swing has changed a lot in the last 50 years. And the reason why it's changed is because people's posture is better. Back then, somebody 6'4 really had a hard time. Really had a hard time playing the game because basically they were too slumped over and all that kind of stuff. And I think length of clubs, and I think fitness and that kind of stuff, but posture has been the biggest change. You cannot show me a really good player right now that does not have really kind of perfect posture. And what we found, and what I've proved on the simulator with myself, if I get in the right position, I hit the ball 10 yards further. If I'm in the wrong position, my swing slows down. So it's, and that's what we're going to try to do with Charlie, is just to show him kind of where he needs to be, give him the exercises so that he can get there. So not only does it help the golf swing, but it helps quality of life.
Now, you said you weren't unique when you came onto the Champions Tour. By that, do you mean from a fitness perspective?
From a fitness perspective. I started working out, but just kind of hodgepodge type thing, when right when I turned 39 or 38, because I have a hard time getting the ball through the rough. I'm hitting my club through the rough. I didn't have the strength. So I started running and doing all this kind of stuff and working out a little bit. And a couple of years later, I won the PGA down in West Palm Beach in 1987. But it was a fitness thing. It was not necessarily, I just outlasted everybody. Heat index 108 or something like that, you know. So, I mean, it was just, the greens were terrible. They were burnt out. So, honestly, I just outlasted everybody for 72 holes.
And how much of your Champions Tour career can be said is the same thing? Where,
same thing.
I mean, it's, again, 69 years young, you're still one of the strongest guys out there.
Yes. As far as distance, I'm still a little bit above average driving distance, you know, being 20 years senior to some of the guys that are coming out there. The average age out there now is probably 58, I would think, or 56, something like that. And I'm still above average driving distance-wise. And it's not because of my height, it's not because of, you know, whatever, but it just has to do with my flexibility, my turn, and I think strength level.
Core.
Core.
Your core, which leads to my next question, which I highlighted. I really wanted to ask you this. Who can do more sit-ups, you or Gary Player?
Gary can still do more sit-ups, but that's really? That's his thing. I mean, that's his thing. I don't spend the time doing them. I guarantee you, if we worked at it, we probably could do that, but I spend more time on strength, probably tricep strength, core strength, more turning, rotation. What's really interesting, too, and I mean, when you look at the guys that are playing now, used to, rotation of the hips was the big thing. And, you know, the rotation of the hips and everything. And everything kind of turned. And they articles were hitters and pullers. You know, there were two types of players back then, hitters and pullers. And they said I was a puller because everything just rotated around when my hips rotated. The young players now, the hips rotate just enough so that now the upper body can apply all the club speed. And in watching the young kids now, I mean, Roy McIlroy, his hips turn a little bit and then they almost reverse while his upper body is going through. And so that's where all the club head speed's coming right now. But you have to have good core strength and you have to have good posture and good strength in your back to be able to do that.
And not to pick on Rory or any player for that, but that's the X factor. But a lot of people say in the long term we don't know what that could do to the body.
Body, exactly. And I think, you know, to stabilize the lower body and to be able to turn and rotate through here, I think is, we don't know, honestly, we don't know how much adding muscle mass to a small frame affects the ligaments, tendons, and all that. That's my biggest concern with someone who has a small frame body like Tiger. Tiger was not a big frame guy. And he got really big, muscular, and I'm not sure how much that had to do with the problems he has with his back, his knee, his, you know, the different things. That you can't work out tendons and ligaments. They are what you got, but the muscles, you know, they get stronger.
You're kind of the case study when it comes to this. You said you started around 38 years old,
right,
which is later in the career for you certainly then, and even now for players. I mean, there seems to me there was a right way to do it and maybe a wrong way to do it depending on your body type.
I think there's a total. I think heavy weights to a certain body type, creating a certain amount of muscle to a certain body type is probably not good. Not good from a longevity standpoint. Mm-hmm. Short term, yes, possibly, because when we started, nobody worked out with weights. Weights was really taboo when we were early on.
Gary was a freak.
Well, Gary didn't work out with weights as much as he just, you know, did all the, you know, the push-ups and the sit-ups and all that. But as far as heavy weights, you know, you've got guys that are bench pressing, what, 200 pounds, 250, squatting, you know. So all that stuff, it looks good. The body looks good. But is it beneficial to an extent? Does it have a time limit on how long it's beneficial? That we're still waiting for, basically.
Switch gears a little bit, because there was an announcement earlier this week. When you and I were speaking off camera, you seemed to have an opinion about this. The USGA and the RNA changed their decision as far as the use of video technology. Now, it's two questions that you and I were addressing. One, you have been playing long enough that video technology is still something relatively new. You remember the days when there wasn't this video technology, but you're not a big fan of it today.
Well, I'm not. When we played, our televising was the last three holes. I mean, that was pretty much it. What happened on number 8 or 9 was just, you know, a memory, and it was very much self-reliant, you know. But just as a side note, I don't think I've ever seen too many people take advantage of the rules. But now, with television, you know, sometimes they'll do the front side, the back side, sometimes both, depending on the groups or whatever. They may follow one group and not follow the other 30 or 40 groups. And I always felt like unless you had a camera on everybody, every shot, every time, you can't pick out one situation and say, oh, he did this wrong, when it's something that could have possibly happened to 15 other guys somewhere during the round that the camera, you know, didn't pick up.
And this has led to an interesting conversation amongst ourselves. Take what happened to Dustin Johnson at the PGA Championship at Kiawah, for example. When he grounded his club in what he thought was just a waste area, turned out to be a bunker, and it cost him basically a chance in a playoff. I could imagine later that night there were players watching that footage thinking, well, I did the same thing.
I did the same thing, sure.
Has that ever come up in your career?
Not in mine. Thank goodness I didn't hit anything that was that could have been questionable as far as whether it was a bunker or not.
After fact.
You know, when you've got sand everywhere, but you got one area that is designated as a bunker, it's very difficult. I mean, anybody would have made that same, I think anybody would have made that same mistake. And it did cost him the championship there. So it's hard sometimes. I mean, especially not knowing until after the fact that he actually did something wrong. And a lot of times in the PGA, you actually have an official that walks around with you. We always had a PGA guy that followed each group. And so why that wasn't caught, you know, at the time, probably apparently the PGA guy was not really aware of it either.
When you look at the other side of this ruling, which you also had an opinion about, Vera Collins, emails, whatever the case may be, like the Lexi Thompson ruling at the ANA Inspiration, are you okay with people calling in potential violations as long as the tour rules officials go through the same protocol, look at the tape, and decide on it themselves?
I think it's fine as far as viewer participation goes, but I think there's some people that just sit there trying to find something, you know. That's kind of their calling in life, apparently. This was so, for them to have to do it in slow motion and to say, oh, well, you can't see the coin once she put her ball down, or as much of the coin. I think that was not that you couldn't see the coin, it was just not as much of the coin. And we're talking about an eighth of an inch, maybe quarter of an inch or something like that. And this is over a 2-foot putt or a foot and a half putt. I mean, this is a very short putt. It's not like, you know, she's trying to get an advantage or something like that. But, you know, to have someone call in and say, you know, that she didn't place the ball down on the exact same spot that it was marked is just a little bit picky in my opinion. I don't think there was, you know, I certainly don't think she was trying to get an advantage for doing it. But with a big coin, it's kind of hard to put it right on the radius, you know, the same time. Like we were talking about, if you were doing it with a dime, it's much easier, you know, to put it back in the same spot. So I don't know. I'm sorry that it happened to her. I know it was very upsetting. But as far as people calling in, you know, you can't stop people from calling in. Whether you listen to them or not is a whole different process. But anyway, I think it'll evolve into something that actually is okay.
Another a bit of a different topic, and only because the Zurich Classic this week is a team event for the first time. I think it's 51 years on the PGA Tour. Your record in team events is phenomenal, obviously with your sons.
Well, yes.
And the father-sons. Yeah. So you've won that event with two different sons, which is pretty amazing in and of itself. You won the Bass Pro Shop Legends event. Right. Is there a key? I mean, do you just walk to the first tee and apologize and say, that's it, we're done, let's go play now? I mean, how do you do team events?
That's a great idea. you know, I think you look at it, sometimes when you look at a team event, you look at it as, you know, you're an individual playing with a partner. And to me, I always thought it was an advantage, you know, not a disadvantage. And I think sometimes people go into it and say, well, it's a disadvantage because, oh, there's so much more pressure, I don't want to let this guy down. And Lanny and I had very successful Ryder Cup. He and I think, finished Ryder Cups like 5-1 or something like that as far as team championships go. So, but, you know, I knew Lanny. Lanny was going to play his heart out. He was going to do his best he could, and there was no apologizing. I mean, if he knocked it 6 feet by, you know, from 30 feet, that was his style of play. I think a lot of times people change their style of play when they get into a team event. They all of a sudden they start hitting it closer to the hole because they don't want a three putt. They don't want to put a pressure on the guy that's, you know, his partner. When his partner's knocked it 5 or 6 feet by a bunch of times and had to make it coming back. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just being able to go out there and play your game you know, if you three putt or if you don't make a putt or if you, you know, hit a bad shot, that's going to happen anyway. And don't put any extra pressure on yourself because you don't want to upset or put the other partner or your partner in a bad situation. I just don't think it's necessary.
And Lanny's probably not the guy on top of a lot of guys' list that you would go out there relaxed with. I mean, Lanny's an intense individual.
But he did that, and that was the whole thing, is that, you know, I'm going to play my game, you know, and you play your game because you're playing good, and together our game should be pretty good.
Now, I've been very vocal writing about this in the past. You and I have spoken about it, and you mentioned the Ryder Cup, so I'm just going to go ahead and bring it up. Back in 2016, Golf Digest referred to you, quote, as the greatest golfer no one knows. And I'm not quite sure where they were going with that. I think it had to do with the Open being in Oakmont and obviously you having the history there. Does that maybe have something to do with the fact that you never got the call as a Ryder Cup captain, or is that unfair?
I think, you know, people don't really realize how the Ryder Cup captains are picked. I think that's the kind of the big thing. And there was actually just one person that really picked the Ryder Cup captains for a number of years, and that was the executive director of PGA. The other people, they're there on the committee or whatever, the PGA president and maybe the executive guy or maybe the treasurer or whatever. But the executive director of the PGA is one, the single person that actually had the most to do with picking. And I heard some of the things. Just to kind of tell you, when Lanny and I, when I turned 95, I was supposed to be a Ryder Cup captain. Mm-hmm. It was kind of the way it was. And Lanny came to me and says, how about me doing it 95 and you going against Seve in 97 in Spain? Seve's going to be the captain in 97. And I said, you know, that sounds great. I mean, I think that's fine. So Lanny was the
right. You like the idea of taking Seve on in Spain.
In Spain, captain to captain, that sounded great. And so 95, Lanny, they let Lanny be captain in 95. Now, he's 2 years younger than me. So then 97 came around, and I was in Japan. I was in Tokyo. And come to find out that they named Kite captain, and not me. So it went against everything that was done in 95. I would have been the 95 Ryder Cup captain. I would have been a Ryder Cup captain. But we decided, so things changed over that two-year period of time. Nobody ever talked to me. Nobody ever let me know. It was just, I just assumed that that was the way it was going to be because that's what we decided in 95. So, but not knowing, I think, you know, it's kind of funny. Winning the U.S. Open at Oakmont, it finished on Monday morning, not Sunday afternoon, which, you know, you just kind of, yeah, okay. If it had finished on Sunday afternoon, then probably more people would have known that I won the U.S. Open instead of 10 o'clock on Monday morning, you know. The USGA, I think if you go and look at the 1983 U.S. Open, there's not a video on the 1983, even though there is one for everyone else. They kind of added it on because of actually Rams advertising. When they cut out all the stuff out of there, there was not enough tape to actually make one on its own, so it's actually added on to the 82. So it's just circumstances, I think, as much as anything else. But, you know, I'm very happy. I went to eat at a restaurant last night, and yeah, there was a group of people there that knew who I was. So it's not like I'm in total anonymity, but probably not as popular. And also, Rex, at the same time, I won my three majors in a time where people were winning four. Or Nicklaus was winning 18. You had all these.
It was a tough class.
It was a tough class. Had I done it this day and time, won three majors and have the record I had in the Ryder Cup in this day and time, I'd be a national hero, you know? But back then it was just, he didn't win as much as Trevino or Nicklaus or, you know, Raymond Floyd or, you know, Halloran won three opens. And then you had Crenshaw and Curtis Strange coming out, you know, right around the same time. I mean, huge, huge college record and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I was just in there in that kind of thing. A trivia question is, there were four guys that won three or more majors in the 80s. Nicklaus, Ballesteros, and Tom Watson, who was the fourth. Yeah. So I was among four of probably the greatest players that had ever, you know, ever played this game. And I was just the, you know, I was the other guy.
You mentioned national hero, and this is probably not going to be a fair question that you appreciate, but we refer to the Ryder Cup all the time as a battle, as going head-to-head. You were the only man who had any experience at all with that, having served in Vietnam, having been in the military. Given your chance now, what kind of captain do you think you would be?
Well, you know, it's funny. One, I think the captain gets a lot more credit than he actually deserves for either a loss or a win as far as the Ryder
Cup. Credit blame.
Oh. Yeah, because it doesn't matter. You've got 12 of the best players that are playing here in the United States. Now, I think how you pair them really has a lot to do with it. But I can tell you this, that I'm not taking anything against Davis Love, the last Ryder Cup captain, but I think my wife could have captained that team and they'd have won. I'm just saying, and I told her that. And it has nothing to do with Davis. I mean, Davis is a great guy. I love Davis. But I'm just saying that with the team that they had and with the team the Europeans had, you could have thrown up balls and, you know, the U.S. would have won, I think, that week. They just had a better team. I think in the past, Europeans have had a better team. And there is some camaraderie with the European team that probably the U.S. team doesn't have. It's a whole different situation. They kind of travel together. They do all this kind of stuff. The U.S. is so independent. You know, we go here, we spend more time. So I think that has a little bit to do with it. But if you got a more balanced, better team than this team, you're going to win. I mean, that's just kind of the way it is. So anyway, I think the captain gets, like I said, too much bad and good for how the team actually ends up.
When you referenced how captains used to be picked, and that is absolutely true, it's changed now.
It's changed.
With
it's
the
changed.
Task force with the...
Yeah, task force. It's just, you know...
Sorry, committee.
Buddies
they
picking
hate
buddies,
task force.
Buddies yeah. picking buddies. I mean, that's just kind of the way it is. And used to, it was definitely an honor. It still is an honor. Trust me, it still is an honor. But it was more of an honor and a privilege back then. It was given to, at one time, except for Arnold Palmer, it was given to people who had won the PGA. I mean, so, and then that was broken, I guess, in 97. But so it's one of those things that it was an honor given to people who had performed and all that kind of stuff. And I'd won the PGA twice, so it was not like, you know, the PGA of America didn't know who I was. Probably one of the only two-time PGA champions that was not a Ryder Cup captain.
I don't think there's any probably about that, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. But I'm just saying that it is an honor. And I know Watson was picked twice, and I think Nicklaus was, and Palmer, and now Davis was picked twice. And did they deserve to be picked twice? You know, I don't know. Should that honor have been gone to someone else that, you know, because it is an honor. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, he was a Ryder Cup captain, or there's five Ryder Cup captains playing in this tournament. There's whatever. And so if it was an earned thing, then I think that would be great. But it's not an earned thing. It's a privilege and an honor that's placed on by other individuals.
And I know you get tired of talking about it, but it's something I've always been passionate about. 9-3-1 is your record in the Ryder Cup, by the way.
I was 9-0 my first two Ryder Cups. I did not get beat in my first two Ryder Cups.
Who finally beat you? Seve once.
Actually, well, no, Seve never did.
You tied Seve.
No, it was actually up in, I was 9-0 going into Muirfield. And I actually think it was Sandy Lyle and... I don't know who he was playing with. They actually won the first match. I was playing with Payne Stewart. That was first match I had lost in the Ryder Cup. And but then I kind of got used to losing. I lost two other matches. I actually tied Bernhard the last day individually.
I don't think you get used to it at all. I do want to send you out on a much more upbeat note. If you look at what's happened in golf this year, 8 of the winners so far this year have been 25 years old or younger. You did not play in your first PGA Tour event until you were 25 years old.
It's amazing.
Can you think about how the game has changed?
Well, the game has changed dramatically. I mean, I had my children at the AGA tournaments, you know, when they were like 10 and 12, you know. So, you know, people are being groomed now at an early age, really early age, to do this. Now, most of them don't make it. There are a few that do. But it's so, I went to my last PGA Tour event was at Atlanta, was at Sugarloaf in Atlanta Classic. I go out on the practice tee, and I was so out of place. I was so out of place because I didn't have a trainer, teacher, psychologist, and caddy standing behind me hitting balls. It was just me. Just me and my caddy. So, I mean, that's kind of the way it's gotten into now. But, you know, they're playing for so much money now and looking for any kind of advantage or, you know, because it's huge. And so, I mean, Trevino, I mean, it was so funny because he always said, I don't want anybody that hadn't won the U.S. Open trying to tell me how to play. I mean, it's kind of the old school versus the new school. And you wonder how many decisions some of the guys can make on their own. But mechanically, they're so good right now. And honestly, I enjoy watching the golf now. I mean, it is so much fun. I love to see all these young guys win. I think it's been good for the game. And I think it's only going to get better. I understand that young participation has increased a little bit in the last year or two. Mm-hmm. And it's all because of the Ricky Fowlers and the Jordan Spieths and the guys that are out there playing and doing so well now. So I'm thrilled to watch them. I think it's fun to watch. And which for a time, I can honestly say I didn't watch much golf on television. But now I do.
When you go back to that first event, just out of curiosity, you had just played, if I read this correctly, 172-hole event before you played in your first tour event.
Florida State Open, I played and bogeyed the next to last hole to lose by one, and that was the only 72-hole event I played before I qualified for the tour.
When you get to that first tour event and you're sharing a locker room or time on the range with Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus, what was that feeling like?
Probably I was more naive than I was thrilled. Thrilled, excited, or whatever. I can remember standing on the first tee at Tucson, Arizona, at Tucson National, and the tee was about 60 yards long, and the tee's not very wide, and there were people lined up on both sides of this tee down for about 60 yards. My thought was not hitting in the fairway, was not anything like that. My thought was not killing someone by hitting a low heeler or a low toe hook or something. So honestly, that was how pretty much naive I was about this whole golf experience. Nobody on either side of my family had ever played the game, didn't know anything about the game. And so we were just kind of learning on the go. And it took me quite a while to get my short game, which a lot of the guys, by the time they're 10, or 12, pretty much have a good short game established by then. It took me probably 10 years to get to where I was competitive short game-wise.
Because you didn't start golf until you were 21 years old.
I didn't start. It was almost 23. I was. It was the March before my 23rd birthday when I started playing.
And it's because you were bored, I think is what I've read, that you had nothing else to do?
And not bored, but I had one class left in school from 8 to 9. I was done at 9 o'clock. My wife got home at 6 in the afternoon. I didn't have anything to do between 9 and 6, so there was a golf course right next door. So I said, well, I'll just go play golf, just waste time or whatever. But I got so good so quick and fell in love with the fact that I could get good real quick. I played team sports all my life. And I would pitch a really good ball game, and the shortstop make an error, and I lose 1-0. And I decided golf was something that, you know, if somebody's going to make an error, it's going to be me. But if I worked at it hard and played good, then I was going to get the credit for, you know, playing good. And if I didn't, it wasn't the shortstop dependent on it. So people still blame their caddies, but they really don't.
Mr. Nelson, thank you so much for your
time.
This is great,
Rex. Thank you. I enjoyed this. I appreciate it very much.
That'll do it for this edition. Check back next week.